This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch and Happy New Year. Thanks for joining us today. As you enjoy family and friends and maybe a full day of football or whatever you may be doing on this New Year's Day, we welcome you and thank you for joining us here on Washington Watch. And we're taking a look back on this New Year's Day. In October, the Family Research Council and other conservative organizations and leaders gathered in Washington, D.C. for the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit. In today's show, we'll hear from Todd Starnes, conservative commentator on FoxNews.com and host of the Todd Starnes radio show. He's also the author of The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. We'll also hear from a panel that discussed the state of religious liberty in the United States. Panelists included former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, plaintiffs in various religious liberty legal cases, and Kelly Fedorik, who is a legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Travis Weber, director of the FRC Center for Religious Liberty, moderated the panel. So that's all coming up. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. All right, now, we bring you a compelling address from Todd Starnes, the Fox News radio host, told the audience at the Values Voter Summit that mainstream media discussions about toxic masculinity are part of a war on men that aims to criminalize masculinity. Let's listen now as Todd discusses a wide range of religious liberty issues.
Now, I'm excited about what President Trump is doing, because he's delivering on campaign promises. And that's something unheard of with Republican presidents. And it sort of befuddled the mainstream media, which is always enjoyable. But again, as I warn you, the fight goes on. The sex and gender revolutionaries and the cultural jihadists are on the warpath. They are loud and they are proud. Just the other day, the Boy Scouts announced they will allow girls to join their once-storied organization. Now, I spoke to Mark Hancock, who heads up Trail Life USA, a Christian-based scouting organization. He tells me this decision is nothing less than a war on boys. Many of you have started hearing a phrase in the mainstream media, something called toxic masculinity. It's not just a war on boys, it's a war on men. And there are those in this country that want to feminize men. They want to criminalize masculinity. Well, I found something interesting over these past few months. Our nation has been wrecked by terrible natural disasters, hurricanes. There have been fires. There was that terrible situation in Las Vegas. And I saw men, grown men, wading into the floodwaters, running into the bullets to save people. And I didn't hear the mainstream media complaining about toxic masculinity then. But again, even though President Trump is in office, we are fighting this war. I give you examples. Dr. Mark Green, a fine patriot Christian man from my home state of Tennessee, was forced to withdraw his nomination as our Secretary of the Army. He was attacked, the focus of a vicious smear campaign by militant LGBT activists and Muslim activists. You see, they're also going after evangelical public servants now. First, they came for the wedding planners and the bakers. Then they came for the Catholic farmers and the Baptist high school valedictorians. Now they are coming to people like Dr. Green and Russell Vought. You might have heard of Russell Vought. He was attacked by Bernie Sanders, that godforsaken socialist. Senator Sanders deemed Mr. Vought unsuitable for office, and he lectured this man, ridiculed this man on Capitol Hill in front of a national audience. And the reason why he attacked Mr. Vought is because Mr. Vought believes salvation is found alone through Jesus Christ. And the senator said that someone with that kind of a religious belief system is really not someone this country is supposed to be about. Governor Andrew Cuomo said New Yorkers who believe in traditional marriage and protecting the life of the unborn should leave his state. And then you might have heard about Senator Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin and Al Franken. They ganged up and bullied Amy Coney Barrett, a law professor at the University of Notre Dame, a fine Catholic woman, President Trump's nominee for one of the lower courts. And it was at this gathering, at this grilling session, that the senator said these words, and I want to read this verbatim. When you read her speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to the big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country. You see, ladies and gentlemen, the Catholic dogma is of concern to Senator Feinstein. She was also interrogated by Senator Al Franken and Dick Durbin, who demanded to know if the professor was an Orthodox Catholic. Well, I've got news for those anti-Christian, anti-religious bigots on Capitol Hill. I want the senator to know this. The Southern Baptist dogma lives loudly in this fellow right here, ladies and gentlemen. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. That's the dogma that lives in me, Senator. But I've got news for all of those liberals out there, the secularists and the progressives that want to silence free speech in America. It's not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. It's not going to happen. We know this war on our values and our culture is being waged on public school campuses across the Fruited Plain. I bring you a story from Vista del Lago High School in Folsom, California, near Sacramento. You can imagine the shock of the patriotic moms and dads in that part of the country when they were told their children were no longer allowed to chant USA at sporting events and pep rallies because those words, USA, could be inappropriate and intolerant. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to call an audible here. I feel obligated at this very moment to start chanting USA. Let's give those folks in Folsom Cordova School District a raging case of microaggressions they will never forget. Let's go for it. USA!
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 You see, this is why I love coming and hanging out with you folks. I live in liberal Brooklyn, New York. They don't do that in my neighborhood. Our time is quickly drawing to a close, and I want to leave you with a word of hope. President Reagan said freedom is just one generation away from extinction. Last year, we came pretty close, didn't we, folks? Franklin Graham said we were at a moral tipping point. But I believe, and I am not a theologian here, so this is just my personal opinion, but I believe God saw fit to give our nation a second chance. And I believe the reason why is because of people like you, men and women who are unafraid to stand up for what's right. You see, I have hope in the future because I believe that we, the people, can restore what former President Obama fundamentally transformed. I have hope in America because of organizations like Young America's Foundation, fighting for freedom and free speech on our college campuses, and Trail Life USA, and American Heritage Girls, and the American Family Association, and the Great Family Research Council. You see, I have hope in America because of a young man named Thomas Gunderson. I interviewed him just last week on my radio show. From his hospital bed, Thomas was there when the bullets started flying in Las Vegas. And when those bullets started coming down from the Mandalay Bay, like many other men, Thomas ran towards the danger. He was shot in the leg, dragged to safety by strangers. The bullet caused severe nerve damage. When Thomas learned that President Trump was going to come to the hospital to pay him a visit, he knew he would have to stand, no matter how painful. And you might have seen the video on my website, toddstarnes.com. When the president entered that room, Thomas grimaced and struggled to his feet. And even though the president told him to stay in that bed, this American young man, 28 years old, from Newport Beach, California, stood tall, and he shook the hand of the man that he calls his president. You see, I have hope. I have hope in our nation because of young people like Alex Dunn, 16 years old, of Fayetteville, North Carolina. His teacher, giving a lesson on free speech, took the American flag and tried to set it on fire in the classroom. When that flag would not burn, he took out a pair of scissors and tried to rip the flag, but the flag would not rip. So out of frustration, that school teacher, public school teacher, threw the flag on the ground and began to stomp on Old Glory. And that 16-year-old boy who I interviewed for my radio program said, "Mr. Starnes, something just welled up inside of me." And that young man jumped up out of his seat and ran to the front of the class, and he snatched that flag off the ground. And he took it out of the classroom and gave it to the principal and said, "Sir, this flag has been desecrated. You must retire this flag honorably." I have hope in America because of young people like that. And I'm going to go over just a few moments, but I have hope for the good people of Brandon, Mississippi. They were told by a federal judge appointed to the bench by Barack Obama that they could not do anything remotely religious in their classrooms. Well, it turned out the marching band that year was doing a performance of How Great Thou Art. And the principal started adding up the numbers. He figured they didn't have enough cash to pay for the whole fine, $10,000 per violation. They figured they could pay for the trombone section, but that was about it. So he told the kids, "I'm sorry, kids, but you can't play your halftime show this year. We might get in trouble with the government." Well, the Friday night football came there in Brandon, Mississippi, near Jackson. And if you know anything about that part of the country, it's mighty humid in the fall on football night. And they were all gathered there. Halftime came, and soon an eerie silence filled the stadium. There was no marching band. They were sidelined by the federal government. But then suddenly, there was a lone voice in the distance, and people in that stadium heard these words, "O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the worlds thy hands have made." And then one by one, people began standing all over the stadium, and they began singing with one mighty voice, "How great thou art," in defiance of their federal government. You see, the good people of Brandon, Mississippi, they took a stand. And so I ask you here in this room this morning, who among us is willing to take a stand with the Thomas Gundersons and the Alex Dunns and the good people of Brandon, Mississippi? Who among us will stand? They will try to silence our voices. They will try to bully us into submission. But we must not be silent. We must not be bullied. We must not bow down. So I say this in closing. Do not hide liberty's light under a bushel. No, hold it high. Let the flame of freedom burn bright for all the world to see. I believe it's time for every gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American to take a thunderous stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. God bless you all very much. Thank you. God bless you.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this New Year's Day. We'll continue our special broadcast here of Washington Watch when we return, and we'll hear from a religious liberty panel at this year's Values Voters Summit. All right, don't go away. We're back right after this.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication. In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now, any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Well, I do hope you're enjoying this first day of 2018. I tell you what, I can't think of a better way to start it than listening to Washington Watch. Well, 2017 included a variety of significant religious liberty battles. No doubt there's going to be some ahead. But let's look back on what has happened in this past year. And let's listen now to the panel at the 2017 Values Voter Summit that discussed the state of religious liberty in the United States. Panelists included former Congressman Frank Wolf of Virginia, plaintiffs in various religious liberty legal cases, and Kelly Fedoric, legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. Travis Weber, who is the director of the Family Research Council Center for Religious Liberty, moderated this panel.
The writer David Foster Wallace has said, "There is no such thing as not worshiping. Everyone worships. The only choice we get is what to worship." Hundreds of years ago, those who fled here from Europe sought a haven to worship freely, to be able to live out their faith. America became a safe harbor for religious freedom. This safe harbor grew to be a prosperous nation and was a light to the world in the areas of religious freedom and human rights. More recently, in terms of our religious freedom advocacy abroad, the United States was integral to the development of the international human rights framework that followed World War II and the horrors of the Holocaust. At the time, it was clear that Christian beliefs informs human rights for the United States and for other nations, and religious freedom is a major part now of the human rights framework we deal with today. For only when we recognize that all human beings are created in the Imago Dei, the image of God, do we even have a basis for the notion of human rights. These religious freedom protections internationally are reflected in Article 18 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the same article of the treaty that followed, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which states that everyone shall have the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right shall include the freedom to have or to adopt a religion or belief of his choice, and freedom to manifest his religion or belief in worship, observance, practice, and teaching. In addition, no one shall be subject to coercion which would impair his freedom to have or adopt a religion or belief of his choice. The United States has ratified this treaty and follows it, unlike the many other nations which agreed to it but don't take their human rights obligations seriously. While the United States has made this vision of religious freedom part of its foreign policy in the past, we are in danger of losing this today. Human rights concerns alone should lead us to protect religious freedom abroad. But if this is not enough, there are security and economic reasons for doing so too. To further discuss religious freedom abroad and give us an update on where it stands in key areas around the world, we are joined today by the Honorable Frank Wolf. Former Congressman Frank Wolf is the Distinguished Senior Fellow of the 21st Century Wilberforce Initiative, an organization working to advance the human right of religious freedom around the world through advocacy, capacity building, and technical innovations. He was elected to Congress in 1981 and served Virginia's 10th District for 17 terms, during which time he was a stalwart defender of religious freedom. Congressman Wolf authored the International Religious Freedom Act and legislation to create a State Department Special Envoy for religious minorities in the Near East and South Central Asia. The founder and co-chair of the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, Congressman Wolf's honors include the 2015 Wilson Chair in Religious Freedom at Baylor University, the Presidential Eleanor Roosevelt Award for Human Rights, and the Chuck Colson Center for Christian Worldview's William Wilberforce Award. Congressman Wolf, welcome.
Well, thank you, Travis, and I want to thank FRC for the great work that they do. Many of you might know the words of the song, "The Boxer," that Simon and Garfunkel sang in Central Park a number of years ago. It says, "Man hears what he wants to hear, but disregards the rest. There are the cries of the persecuted that we in the West are refusing to hear. I have a grave and a growing sense of urgency regarding the erosion of religious liberty at home and abroad. All over the world, people of faith are denied the fundamental inalienable human right to confess and express their faith according to the dictates of their conscience. According to a Pew survey, 75% of the world live in a religiously repressive nation, meaning roughly 5.5 billion people. President Ronald Reagan, who one of the finest presidents we've ever had, said the words in the Constitution and the words in the Declaration of Independence were a covenant not only with the people of Philadelphia in 1776 and 1787 when the Constitution was ratified, but a covenant with a Catholic priest who's in jail today, a covenant with a Catholic nun who's being faced with genocide in Iraq, a covenant with a Buddhist monk in Tibet that's being faced with oppression by the religious government. And that covenant is now being shredded from China to Iran to Egypt, for Pakistan, Vietnam. The face of repression varies, but the outcome's the same. It's harassment, fear, imprisonment, and even death, simply because of what a person believes. China, Catholic bishops are under house arrest. Protestant pastors are in jail. Liu Xiaobo, the 2010 Nobel Prize winner, nobody cared about him, died in prison. Chinese lawyers are arrested and tortured. In Tibet, 130 Tibetan monks and nuns have poured kerosene on their body, lit a match, and killed themselves in protest to the Chinese government, and nobody says a word. The Uyghurs, the Muslim group in China, are being persecuted. Just yesterday, Voice of America announced that China is sending a high number of Uyghurs to re-educational camps, and yet the West is silent. Chinese companies, really fronts for the Chinese government, are purchasing major Western movie theater chains like AMC and are buying up movie studios in the United States, which will make it difficult, if not impossible, for movies to be produced that are in any way critical of the Chinese government and their record for human rights and religious freedom. In Iraq, genocide has taken place against Christians and Yazidis. And more biblical activity has taken place in Iraq than any other country of the world other than Israel. Abraham is from Ur, which is modern-day Nasiriyah. Daniel is buried in Iraq. He spent all his life in Iraq. Ezekiel is buried in Iraq. 3 years ago, ISIS blew up Jonah's tomb. The Christian community has dropped from 1.5 million in 2003, now down to 250,000 and maybe even less. We are ready to see, if bold action is not taken, we will see the end of Christianity in the cradle of Christendom. And at this very moment that I speak, 3,000 young Yazidi women are being held by ISIS and the Yazidis are being persecuted. It is important for our government to help the Christians and the Yazidis to stay and to return to their villages.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is a special edition of Washington Watch, the New Year's edition. And we've got much more on the state of religious liberty in the nation when we return, so don't go away.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In 2012, a shooting attack took place at Family Research Council's headquarters in Washington, D.C. The gunman confessed to the FBI that he used Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map to choose FRC as a target for violence. The Southern Poverty Law Center, known as SPLC, likes to boast about its mission to destroy the groups it labels as hate groups, groups that include mainstream conservative and Judeo-Christian organizations. SPLC was founded in the 70s to fight groups like the KKK. Not anymore. These days, SPLC has become a tool for the left to label anyone who doesn't agree with them as a hate group. The SPLC uses smear tactics, intimidation, and a knack for fundraising to silence its political opponents. The group has become so successful that they've stashed $69 million in offshore accounts. Be informed on the true nature of SPLC and how they work to silence groups like Family Research Council, Alliance Defending Freedom, American Family Association, and many others. Visit frc.org/SPLC.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the host of Washington Watch. The website, if you would like to find out more about the Family Research Council or any of the archived editions of Washington Watch, go to TonyPerkins.com. If you want to keep up with me on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Well, earlier in the show, we heard from Todd Starnes, conservative commentator, and also a panel of religious legal experts. Now, let's return to the panel, moderated by FRC's Travis Weber. He is the director of FRC's Center for Religious Liberty.
With some notable exceptions, the church in America has not been seized with a crisis facing the church in Iraq or the Middle East or Syria or Egypt or China. To a person when I was there last month, every Christian we met with in Iraq expressed a pervasive sense of abandonment. These courageous men and women of faith can't understand while burning the churches, forced conversion, and genocide in the cradle of Christendom is not being met with urgency and action by fellow believers in the West. In Nigeria, terrorism, Boko Haram has signed an agreement, has pledged to, as allegiance to ISIS, and almost 20,000 Christians have been killed by Boko Haram and Fulani militants. And yet the church in the West and our governments in the West are saying almost nothing. You remember 3 years ago, the Chibok girls, 200 Christian girls in the town of Chibok were kidnapped by Boko Haram. The world did hashtag bring back our girls. All the leaders of all the governments. Half of the girls have not come back. Have you seen anybody mention the Chibok girls lately? And we were there, we met with a counselor who said, here's what he's telling the parents. One, your daughter may never come back. Two, if she comes back, she will be pregnant or she will have a child. Three, she will be forced to convert to Islam. And yet, the silence of all those people who did hashtag bring back our girls, the silence we hear is deafening. There's much more that could be said about persecution of people of faith. In Egypt, Coptic Christian pastor just killed yesterday. In Vietnam, persecuting the Catholic Church and the Buddhists. In Iran, the Baha'is are being crushed The Baha'is are mild-mannered people. They're being crushed, and nobody speaks out for the Baha'is. In Sudan, 2.1 million people died, and the Bashar government, he's an indicted war criminal, and we very seldom hear anyone say anything about Sudan. And growing anti-Semitism. There's growing anti-Semitism spreading around the world, and even on American college campuses. And in Pakistan, there's a Christian woman, Azia Bibi, who's been in jail under a death sentence, not charged, sentence for blasphemy for taking a drink out of a cup of water. And the church in the West is silent. It'd be foolishness to suggest that people of faith in our country, in America, are experiencing even a fraction of the persecution I've just described in Iraq, in Nigeria, and China. However, Cardinal Francis George, former president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in 2010, predicted. Here's what Cardinal George said. He said, I expect to die in my bed. My successor will die in prison. And his successor, he said, will die a martyr in the public square. Is this alarmist, unnecessarily dramatic? I pray so, but the evidence demands an examination of the prospect. That said, despite the constitutional protections that religious freedom has historically enjoyed in our country, its sacred standing in the American experiment is daily being encroached upon. That's what you're going to hear with regard to the panels. Moreover, as our brothers and sisters around the world are facing existential threats to their very survival, I personally am convinced that as they who are being persecuted become more than faceless, nameless victims in distant wars and hard-to-pronounce prison cells, and that as we commit to knowing their stories, weeping at their wounds, and interceding on their behalf through prayer and advocacy, that we will find ourselves shaped by these men and these women, these giants of the faith. And I believe that if we're clear-eyed about the times in which we live, I believe these encounters with these giants will make our own faith more robust and strengthen us for the days ahead. In closing, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, in the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends. Dr. King talked about silence. And in closing, German Lutheran pastor and anti-Nazi dissident Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. Dr. Bonhoeffer said, not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. So it's important that we speak, and then it's important that we really act. Thank you very much.
Just as we are called to advocate for religious freedom around the world with the basis being the human right of religious freedom, for hundreds of years we've also worshiped freely in this country with the First Amendment, the Free Exercise Clause, protecting us and guiding us. More recently, statutes like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act have reflected the will of the people to have strong protections for religious liberty here at home. Yet the status of our religious freedom at home has changed in recent times. While the issue did not used to be controversial, it now is, primarily due to the legal and cultural impact of the individual sexual rights agenda and the collision of that agenda with religious freedom and the ability of many to live out their faith in their daily lives. We find religious freedom threatened like never before due to the demands of this movement. Now, some might say that's an overstatement, but if you examine what's happening, if we examine what's going on, look at the halls of cultural power today. Just take a look at them. Big business, media, entertainment, pop culture, academia, and the like. Find where Christian teaching on sexuality is accepted in any of those spheres of influence. It isn't.
Happy New Year, everyone. You're listening to Washington Watch. When we return, more from the Religious Liberty Panel at the 2017 Values Voter Summit. That's next. Don't go away.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication.
They were both groundbreaking world leaders. They were both shot and nearly killed just 6 weeks apart in 1981. Who were these monumental figures who had so much in common? At the Vatican, in June 1982, Pope John Paul II and President Ronald Reagan confided to one another that they believed that God had spared their lives for a special purpose, to confront and defeat an atheistic and genuinely evil Soviet empire. Paul Kenger's new book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century, explores the two great men's remarkable partnership and how it changed history and the world. Listen to Dr. Kenger as he shares insights based on two decades of declassified documents and interviews that detail the extraordinary story of an extraordinary partnership. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this fascinating talk. Again, that is frc.org/speakers. What's more dangerous than fake news? Fake science. We should be able to rely on the unbiased facts of science for some of the biggest decisions of our lives. Our health, our education, the well-being of our families. However, the political left has manipulated so many of these facts to advance their agenda and shut down debate that we are living in a world informed by fake science. In his explosive new book, Fake Science, Exposing the Left's Skewed Statistics, Fuzzy Facts, and Dodgy Data, author Austin Roos punctures the so-called facts used by the left and reveals how poorly their version of data measures up to the actual science. In numerous cases where the science is really settled, such as when the facts of biology tell us that sex is determined by our chromosomes rather than our feelings, or that a new human life begins at conception, suddenly the left isn't so enthusiastic. Go to frc.org/speakers to hear Austin talk about his new book and the real truth about fake science. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for tuning in on this New Year's Day. I hope you're starting a habit, if you don't already have it, and that is tuning in to Washington Watch each day, Monday through Friday. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you want to keep up with what's happening, well, you can do that at TPerkins on Twitter. And by the way, I want to thank those of you who helped us financially last year. Your support is critical for us to bring you this radio program. This program, as I've said before, is brought to you by folks like you. No government money, no advertising dollars. It's simply listeners who want news from the newsmakers, from a biblical perspective. No fake news here, just the real thing. So thank you for helping us through FRC's year-end matching challenge. Because of a generous donor, everything that you gave up until the 31st was matched. And you can continue to support us. If you missed out, well, there's still room. And we'd love to have you as a partner. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right. Here at the Family Research Council, we believe that religious liberty is more than the right to attend a worship service or choose what church you want to worship in. It is the hallmark of our culture, as intended by our founding fathers and practiced by tens of millions of Americans throughout the history of this country. It's the ability to not only hold a set of beliefs, but to live according to those beliefs. Let's continue as we hear from the panelists and their discussion of religious liberty at the 2017 Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. this past October.
Due to this, we have an unprecedented religious freedom crisis on our hands, and we are only seeing the tip of the iceberg. The problems that are coming are contained in the part that is below the surface. Many will see themselves affected soon. Others have already been impacted, but just haven't spoken up. Now the adverse consequences are at the doorstep of small business owners, religious institutions, public officials, those more in the public square, like Jack Phillips, the small business owner whose case is before the Supreme Court. But the forces affecting those in that area will not stop. They'll eventually come to churches and to every Christian who holds to these beliefs. To give us a glimpse of some of these problems we have with us today, some of those for whom the issue has already come to their doorstep and whose religious freedom has been impacted by the sexual rights agenda. Amy Lawson owns Amy Lynn Photography Studio, a small photography business in Madison, Wisconsin. She joins us today, along with Carl and Angel Larson, who own Telescope Media Group in Minnesota. With us also is one of their attorneys from Alliance Defending Freedom, Kelly Fedoric. Amy, I'm going to start with you. And just to give the audience a glimpse of your story and what's happened in your life, why don't you tell us just from the beginning in terms of your business, how did you get involved in the creative design business?
Well, I've always considered myself to be a creative, artistic person, but photographs are especially important to me. When I was five, by the time I was five, I had already lost 3 out of my 4 grandparents. So it was really important for me to feel like I could get to know them and remember them. And thankfully, my parents had boxes of old black and white photographs. They had a box of love letters that my grandfather had written to my grandmother while he was deployed. And so I'd take some of those photographs, and I would take them to my dad and ask him to tell me stories. And occasionally, he would oblige. And as I got older, in high school, I started scrapbooking because I realized I wanted to tell my family's story through photos, but also through that text. And that eventually led me to start my photography business as I realized that I needed to learn to take better photos if I was going to accurately record my family's history.
And so you started the business, and just could you talk a little bit about how you view your faith through the business and living out your beliefs through that business?
About 4 years ago, I married my husband Brian, and we moved to Madison, Wisconsin. And at that point, I felt a renewed passion to photograph not just my family story, but record family stories, marriage stories, stories of God's goodness in people's lives. And because of that, I started my business in 2015 so that I could record these stories in a professional manner.
So it's important for you to live out your faith through the business, and this was something that you just very naturally sought to do.
Yes.
Okay. So, Kelly, could you just kind of come in here and just provide us with an insight in terms of what happened then for Amy and in terms of the freedom of her business to live out her faith through the business?
Well, absolutely, and it's great to be on this panel with all of you, and really appreciate Family Research Council putting on this great event. As Congressman Wolf mentioned, there's obviously a great persecution happening internationally. We're also seeing it here at our own doorstep. We sort of like to call it a more polite persecution. And one of the greatest threats to religious liberty and to free speech comes in the form of non-discrimination laws. These are laws that have added new classifications, usually including sexual orientation, gender identity. And in Amy's case as well, some of these laws, especially at the local level, also prevent or say you can't discriminate based on political affiliation. But you think about what that would mean, it can mean that, well, if you're a speech writer and you don't want to write a speech for President Obama or President Trump, depending on your political views, under the law in Madison, for example, the government could come after you and could not only fine you, but could cost you a substantial amount of money. So what happened in Amy's case is that both the Madison non-discrimination law as well as the statewide law threatened her artistic freedom, her freedom to be able to photograph events consistent with her beliefs. And unfortunately, we're seeing these laws impact more and more people because the government is using them as a sword to come after individuals who simply want to express their beliefs about marriage, about life, beliefs that now happen to be somewhat countercultural. But the government should never be able to have the power to come after anybody and tell them what to think or what to believe or how to run their business. And even if they disagree with their viewpoint on marriage, the government should protect all of us and all of our freedoms. And unfortunately, in Amy's case, the law threatened her. So we filed a lawsuit on her behalf to defend those artistic freedoms.
And you guys had a victory in that case, right?
We did. We were very excited to have this victory.
Carl and Angel, I want to turn to you now and just give us a brief background in terms of your business, Telescope Media Group, in terms of the story behind that. Could you just share a little bit along those lines?
Yeah, thanks again for having us. This is, so 10 years ago, my wife and I started Telescope Media Group. We're a video production company, and right on the very first day, right on the front of our website, we said, we exist to glorify God through top quality media production. Over the years, when I was in college, I was a physics major, but I really had this interest in photography and telling stories and just got in that world because I was passionate about telling people about Jesus and who he was and because he'd changed my life. And so we came up with the name Telescope because a number of theologians I was reading in college pointed all this reality that God is great, he's beautiful, he's glorious, and sin separates us from him in a way that we don't see him the way we ought to see it. So if we can see him clearly, like a telescope does, to see something great and grand more clearly, we wanted to create media that does that. So not like a microscope making something small look big, we want to make something beautiful and grand and great look like it really is through the work that we do. So we've operated successfully for 10 years with a broad range of clients. Not all clients are Christian clients. We believe the Bible, and the Bible says glorify God in all that you do. And so we can work with a broad range of people, but the problem is we're not going to promote all messages. And so over the years, our business, we want to follow Jesus, and we realize that marriage is a central theme in our lives. I've actually officiated a few weddings. We've done a number of premarital counseling sessions with people in our church. We just love marriage, and so we want to tell those stories. And as we started exploring those options for our business, we realized that the state of Minnesota had aggressively set up laws and regulations saying that if we would enter into that marketplace to tell stories about the glory of God, about marriage, then we would also have to tell all stories about marriage, stories that are directly in contradiction with that. So we challenged the law in Minnesota, and that's how we ended up here today.
Angel, in terms of how you and Carl live your lives, I mean, it's obvious how you're seeking to live out your faith through the business, but could you talk a little bit about how you guys view your home and just bringing people into your home and cultivating a dialogue with those with diverse viewpoints?
Yeah, we love all people, and we actually have 8 children, 2 that are adopted and 1 that we're raising as our own, and we can't travel the world very efficiently. And so we decided that quite a few years ago that we were going to bring the world to our table. And as part of doing that, we love international students and college students. And so when you first time you come to my house, you get to sign your name underneath our table, and it makes you feel like you're a part of our family. And also, we have a big wall map, and with the first time that you come, you get to scratch off your country. So my kids, it's a rich place to raise my children. They don't even know how blessed they are to experience cultures week after week of people that are very different from us, but it's a great experience.
And you had something kind of unique happen last night, right?
I have been discipling a young woman, a Liberian woman, who's single. I met her about 7 months ago, and she had been contemplating an abortion. And so I come alongside of her these past 7 months. She carried the baby to term, and last night she called me at 10 o'clock and said, my water broke, please come to the hospital. And so I spent as much time as I could. I had to leave her at 4 a.m. to get a catch-up flight here, and found out at 7:30 that the baby was born healthy, and it's amazing.
So it's obvious for you two that you're seeking to live your faith out in so many areas of your lives. It's understandable that you're naturally going to seek to live your faith through your business. And it's coming to the lawsuit here in terms of the conflict with this non-discrimination law. Carl, if you can just talk a little bit about what made you want to get in the middle of all this. Couldn't you have just kind of gone on your merry way and not brought the suit or not gotten involved in some legal dispute?
Sure. The same biblical view that causes us to believe that all people are created in the image of God also informs our view of marriage. And so we want to tell the stories about marriage because we believe that's one of the fundamental ways that God reveals himself to the world. The Bible begins with a marriage story. It ends with a marriage story. And we want to tell those stories. Now, the issue that we're facing is that we just simply can't promote every single message that comes in our door, just like every other creative professional. And so when we thought about challenging the law and what would really be at stake is, I just simply want to echo what was already said earlier about Bonhoeffer. To see an injustice and to do nothing about it is to participate in that injustice itself, right? Nobody should be under force of government to promote messages that they don't agree with. And that's if you agree with me, and that's if you don't. And so with all the cases that are involved currently in the public eye, Jack Phillips or whichever case you want to select, whatever the opinion is, freedom is a good thing. Being able to operate according to your core beliefs is good for everyone. And so we want to make sure that everyone understands that this case is about freedom for everyone, regardless of what they believe. We really want to hold to that and make sure that everyone is free, because that's where all these freedoms travel together.
Kelly, if you could come in here and, you know, we've discussed these stories here in terms of the conflict with the sexual rights agenda and religious freedom. As many likely know, there's a case before the Supreme Court, the case of Jack Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop, that the court will decide within this next year, dealing with a very similar scenario. So if you can just talk about the importance of that case in light of what we've discussed here and how these issues are related a bit.
Absolutely. I think just to put it in context, Carl and Angel and Amy, they're just three of many people who are currently facing this kind of punishment and coercion at the hands of the government with the threat of these types of laws. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Jack Phillips. He's one of our clients whose case is, as Travis said, at the U.S. Supreme Court. He's a baker from Colorado, and Jack serves everyone who comes in his store. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter whether you're gay or not. He will serve anyone. But like most creative professionals, as they were talking about today, he can't celebrate every event. He can't custom create art for every event. And yet the Colorado Human Rights Commission and the state of Colorado is trying to force him to do so. And his case has now made it all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so at stake before the court is whether or not the government should be free to do this, or whether or not government forcing someone to violate their conscience and to speak a message that they disagree with violates their most fundamental First Amendment freedoms. Because at stake here is not only religious freedom, but it's also free speech. Can the government come in and tell you what to create and what to perform? And so regardless of what one's viewpoints are on same-sex marriage, whether you're supportive of same-sex marriage or you're not, we all have the same freedoms, and the government has to protect everyone. And so what you've seen here, that's Jack's case. So we'd be praying for that case. Oral argument there is December 5th. My colleague Kristen Wagner will be arguing that case, not only for Jack, but for each and every one of us, for our freedom to continue to peacefully live and to work consistent with our most sincerely held beliefs. So the laws that are affecting Jack are affecting Baronel, they're affecting Amy, they're affecting the Larsons, and that's why we're so thankful for the Larsons' courage to stand up against the state of Minnesota and this law that is silencing them. It's attempting to silence who they are. And they didn't mention this, but in addition to fines in the state of Minnesota, you can go to jail for up to 60 days if you're found guilty of violating this particular law. That's a really terrifying place to be. So we have to come together and stand for these freedoms because they affect each and every one of us.
Well, friends, that does it for this New Year's Day edition of Washington Watch. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let me again remind you the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter and you'd like to keep up with me, that's at T Perkins. Until next time. We do hope and pray that you have a blessed 2018, and let me leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.